The Nephilim were gigantic in stature. Their strength was incredible. Their appetites immense. Upon devouring all of humankind's resources, they then apparently began to consume humans themselves. The Nephilim attacked and oppressed humans and were the cause of massive destruction on the earth. In a moment, L.A. Marzulli, Lynn Marzulli, The Nephilim Trilogy on Coast to Coast AM. L.A. Marzulli is the author of the best-selling trilogy, The Nephilim Series. Although The Nephilim Series is fiction, Lynn believes that UFOs are a real part of the end-time Luciferian agenda. That agenda is one of a deception that is multifaceted in its scope, manifesting itself in different ways. Lynn spent over a decade examining the UFO phenomenon, possesses an in-depth knowledge of UFOs, ancient prophecies, and the occult. In addition, he received an honorary doctorate from Pacific International University for his work on the Nephilim. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. So do you want me to call you Lynn or L.A.? What do you prefer?
Lynn is great, George. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Thanks for being on. By the way, the series itself the three books, the trilogy, very well done.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And even though it's fiction, there seems to be some fact in there.
There's a lot of fact in there. It's based on about 15 years of research. And, you know, as a novelist, you take what you read, and then all I'm doing is putting it into a storyline with characters. And I think in some ways it's a better way to download information to people, because a lot of people can't get through a treatise. But, you know, with a fictional story and a storyline and a plot with a beginning, middle, and an end, and some adventure and action in there, you can kind of weave what you're trying to get across, and I hope I've done that in the Nephilim series.
Tonight we're going to talk about some incredible things, Lynn, that you have researched, some of your own theory, speculation. But I think let's get a better handle for a lot of people who may not be abreast on the Nephilim, who might not be versed in who they were, who they may be. So why don't you tell us a little bit about them?
I certainly shall. I'd like to start off by reading a passage from the Book of Enoch. This is a pseudepigraphical book, which means that even though it's attributed to Enoch, it was probably written by someone else. This book is found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's at least 2,000 years old, might be a little older. And let's see what it says. "And it came to pass when the children of men had multiplied that in those days were born unto them beautiful daughters. And the angels, the children of heaven, saw and lusted after them and said to one another, Come, let us choose wives from among the children of men and have children with them. And here's a very important name to remember. And Semyaza, who was their leader, said unto them, I fear that you will indeed not agree to do this deed, and I alone shall have to pay the penalty of a great sin. And the other angels said to him, Let us swear an oath and all bind ourselves by mutual agreement not to abandon this plan, but to do this thing. So they swear an oath to Semyaza, and then they land on Mount Hermon. And what happens, of course, after that is they take the women of Earth and they go into them. They have sex with them. And the children that are born are the Nephilim. The Nephilim are the offspring of what I believe to be angels, fallen angels. In the Hebrew, it says B'nayo Elohim. In the Old Testament scriptures, in the Hebrew scriptures, that B'nayo Elohim is always indicates angels. Now, it doesn't differentiate between good angels or bad angels, but it's always angels.
Right. Now, did these angels, these fallen angels, Lynn, manifest themselves to look human, or did they look human in the first place?
Good question. Real good question. And, of course, the text really doesn't answer that. Let me point to another story which might answer that.
Okay.
All through ancient Hebrew scriptures, when angels do appear, oftentimes they're just mistaken as men. They're mistaken as men. So I believe that they were probably very good-looking men.
Right.
But I also believe that they have the ability to shape-shift, and we can get into that later.
Okay. So they come down. Shemyazi is what? They're
kind of the ringleader.
Lead angel. Okay.
Correct.
A good guy, right? A good angel?
No, I believe he was a fallen angel, one of the bad guys.
Okay. Okay. So his mission then wasn't well-intent.
Well, what they're doing, you know, if you actually get into the story and you read it, what I think the whole purpose of this thing was to somehow ruined the genetic line of man. And there's a reason for that. We can get into that later. Mm-hmm. But I think that this, when they first came down to the time of the flood, which is the judgment for what they did, and wipes out, according to, if you believe the stories, I do believe the stories, wiped out over the earth. It was a global flood. If that really happened, then you have about 400 years from the time they first touched down on the planet to the flood. So a lot of mischief was done. A lot of stuff happened. And they also, in order to do that, in order to gain the access to the women, and here's a point which you might get into a little bit later, in order to gain the access, they actually had to have permission from mankind. And what they did is they dazzled early man, or at least the people that were inhabiting the earth, with some sort of technology. And it says specifically weapons. They showed them weapons. And of course, if we leap up into, let's say, what we all know is the Roswell incident,
right,
and what happened there, and the technology, people like Bob Lazar talk about, you know, the technology, the back engineering, and, you know, all that is, I don't want to say folklore, but people have come out and talked about it. And when enough people start talking about it, you begin to wonder. But there are similarities between the Roswell trade and the trade that happened thousands and thousands of years ago. There seems to be like, okay, we'll give you access to the population, we'll give you access to the women, we'll take the weapons and everything's fine. And
or maybe the fallen angels scared the heck out of humans at the time with their weapons. Maybe we didn't have a choice.
That's kind of interesting. Although I kind of lean to the way the text says that they didn't, there seemed to be like a mutual agreement. I mean, you know, here are the weapons, these look good, and, you know, we'll give you access to the women. But I hear what you're saying. That's a possibility.
Because,
the text,
you know,
doesn't go into that, but, you know, you might be able to read that.
You know, why, for example, you go into Iraq and hand weapons to insurgents to say, hey, we want you to calm down, we want to be able to breed with your women, and here's some weapons. I mean, it's like you're giving weapons to someone who's going to turn and use them on you.
Unless, of course, you're dealing with a supernatural being, an interdimensional being.
True.
Which had so much power to begin with that it was just, you know, they can appear, let's say, in a very benevolent way, a very kind, gracious way. And, of course, what we're talking about is deception here. So these guys, the men of the earth, believe what they're saying, take the weapons, they're dazzled by it, and let's say the deception continues. Of course, it reaches a point where they realize that they've been duped.
And well, and one of the things I'm going to want to find out from you is your thoughts on, because this crosses spirituality and also the possibility of universal science, in that these fallen angels possibly could have been extraterrestrial beings, right?
Well, I mean, this is the whole crux of the matter. It's like we either have to agree on what the texts are saying and what the people who wrote the text believe that they were looking at, and then we have, is there an overview that we can take over thousands of years from different texts that basically talk about the same thing? So if we believe that they're extraterrestrials, that's one worldview. If we believe that they're disembodied, if we believe that they're fallen angels, it's a separate worldview. And of course, the more I study about fallen angels, the more it seems to fit and really cover all bases. It covers the abduction phenomena, it covers the breeding program, which of course I believe will, I believe that the Antichrist will show some sort of a connection to what we call alien, you know, alien presence. But I just think that if, you know, you have two worldviews here, and my worldview is that these are fallen angels. They're interdimensional beings, and some of them are very, very powerful.
Tell me more about the ancient manuscripts that you've researched, because to me, that's critical. The people who wrote them, the stories that they carried on.
Well, let's take, for instance, I mean, the Book of Enoch is an amazing book. And actually, in the Ethiopian Bible, it precedes the Book of Genesis. So it gives you an idea that, you know, certain sections of Christianity have embraced the book, while
sure,
other sections have not embraced the book.
Apparently inspired by God, but who do you think really wrote the book?
Hard to say. I have no idea. It could have been an oral tradition by Enoch and, of course, passed down and eventually written down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most things were done in an oral tradition. But what I love about it is it's a window into the antediluvian world. It's a window into what happened if we believe in the Noah flood. And, of course, you know, the Sumerians, you know, have a flood story. The Chumash Indians out in California have a flood story.
Right. Well, that's
true. It seems to be universal. And so I do believe in the flood story, and I believe it was a universal flood. I don't believe it was located, let's say, in the Middle East. So, you know, you've got this incredible dynamic happening with these beings that are here. And the Book of Enoch gives us a window into what happened. And other scriptures or other texts really, you know, they kind of gloss over it. For instance, the Genesis story in the Bible, a Christian Hebrew Bible, talks about that in Genesis 6, talks about the flood, talks about the fallen angels coming down, talks about the Nephilim, but it doesn't really get into the depth of it the way the Book of Enoch does, where, you know, the fallen angels realize that, you know, we've really goofed here, we shouldn't have done this, and they send Enoch with a petition. And Enoch comes back to them, and this is amazing when you think about it. Enoch comes back to them and says, this is the answer, you shall have no peace. You shall have no peace, which is an incredible statement. And, of course, the angels or the fallen angels are just blown away by this.
Yeah, they're probably trying to figure out what's going to happen to us. You had mentioned a breeding program. That's fascinating to me. What do you mean by that?
Well, according to the Book of Enoch, this was going on, this inbreeding between what I believe fallen angels and the women of Earth. And so the offspring were the Nephilim, and they were gigantic in stature. In fact, I want to skip over to Josephus. This is from the first century Jewish historian. And he says, let me see here.
And that passage that I read, is that pretty accurate, that they possibly could have eaten human beings? And
you know, it's cannibalism exists today in certain parts of the world.
Right.
It's a rarity. But let's say go back 300 or 400 years, and it was in some Pacific tribes, it was practiced.
So it's possible.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. And I frankly believe it. Josephus says, there were till then left the race of giants, who had bodies so large and countenances so entirely different from other men that they were surprising to the sight and terrible to the hearing. Surprising to the sight and terrible to the hearing. The bones of these men are still shown to this very day, unlike to any credible relations of other men. Which means that during the first century, the bones of a Nephilim were openly on display in Jerusalem, and anyone living in that time would have seen them, could have seen them.
How big do you think they were?
12, 14 feet.
Oh, my God.
You know, Goliath, the Bible, you know, we always talk about David and Goliath. It's part of our culture.
Yes.
We all know that.
And a great story.
It is. But Goliath was, I believe, a Nephilim.
I think you're right.
And what's bizarre about that is we know that the flood happened. We know that everyone is wiped out, supposedly, except for 8 people. And from that, the world is repopulated. So it begs the question, wait a minute, if Goliath is a Nephilim, how did he get there? And, of course, if you go into the Hebrew Scriptures, if you go to Numbers 13, there are 2 spies that are sent in by Joshua into the Moses into the Promised Land. I'm sorry, 12 spies are sent in by Moses into Canaan, which later becomes the Promised Land, which we know as Israel today. And they come back, and all of them go, hey, look, you know, the Nephilim were in the land, and we were like grasshoppers in their sight. And because of this report, the people don't want to go into the land. But Joshua and Caleb, 2 of the spies, go, hey, we can do this. We can take this. So the giants were in the land at that time. Now, it begs the question, how did they get there?
Well, I was going to say,
I have no answer for that.
Genetically speaking, if the fallen angels look human-like, which would also be probably in size, how did we end up with 12-foot giants?
Well, it's a really good question. And I don't have an answer per se, except that, you know, their DNA is obviously different than our DNA. Mm-hmm. And when you mix them, you get giants. You get people who are 12 to 14 feet in height.
And I guess there are no survivors from that past civilization?
Well, it's interesting. You know, even in the Americas, during the last century, in places like Ohio and in the Midwest, they would come upon mounds and they would see what they believe were red-haired giants, that bones with skeletons over 9 feet tall in some cases. So whatever is going on here, the idea of that there's a race of giants that somehow continued after the flood, or let's put it this way, let's say if the fallen angels did it once, maybe and according to the Numbers 13 scripture that we talked about, where Joshua and Caleb and the spies go into Israel, if they've done it once, it seems like they can do it again. They're allowed access. For some reason, they're allowed access. Now, I don't have the answer to that. I don't know how they got back in, you know, and why the overseer, call him God if you would,
right,
would allow them to come back to in. Come That's back a mystery. In. And if you jump into modern times, which we can get into a little bit later, I believe the Holocaust, and this is a whole, you know, a whole different bag here, but, you know, Hitler, the occult connections of the Nazi Party, what they were into, I believe that the Holocaust was very deliberate. I believe it was luciferically inspired, and I believe it cracked open an opening which allowed the entrance, once again, of the fallen angels into the world.
Hmm, fascinating theory. Any proof of large dwellings or structures, are they found anywhere on this planet where these people might have resided?
It's interesting when you speak about that and you start looking at the megalithic structures that are not only in the Middle East, but they're everywhere. You know, South America has them. I'm thinking of Chichen Itza for one, Machu Picchu for another. Obviously, the Great Pyramid. Baalbek is one of my favorites that comes to mind. And many of these, the local legends say, for instance, Chichen Itza, the local legend says that the giants built them. Baalbek, the same thing. It's separated by thousands of miles from Lebanon to where Chichen Itza is located, thousands of miles different, and yet the local legend says the giants built them. And if you're familiar with Baalbek, some of the stones are just, you know, we have trouble moving them today.
Some people think it might be an ancient landing pad.
Could be. Yeah. Could be. Interesting.
The technology of the day, do you think there was some tremendous high technology here? You talked about weapons, for example. They must. Where did this technology come from?
Exactly. It begs the question that if they're showing weapons, that means they had some sort of technology, which means that the nuts and bolts theory behind UFOs could be real. In other words, just because they're fallen angels and just because we aren't sure exactly what they can or cannot do, scriptures and texts, ancient texts, aren't really exhaustive on what their capabilities are. You know, it doesn't say, you know, fallen angels can only do this. We know certain things. We know that they can disguise themselves even as an angel of light. We also know that they can appear as men. I believe that they can shapeshift. But I also believe that they're super scientists. And I believe that they're capable of creating all sorts of things. Certainly the nuts and bolts hardware of a UFO, we call a UFO.
Any tie-in with Zechariah Sitchin's Sumerian theories of the Anunnaki and the fact that they came here 400,000 years ago?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm familiar with it. Mike Kaiser, a friend of mine, I know he's been on your show before.
Right.
I'm waiting for the debate. I'm waiting for the debate with bated breath. That'll be interesting. I don't hold to Mr. Sitchin's theories. It's a different worldview than I have. I respect what he comes up with, and he's done some fantastic research. I just don't agree with his conclusions. And I believe that, you know, for me anyway, that the best answer to that is the fallen angel theory, that what we're looking at is interdimensional beings that could be perhaps millions of years old. We're not sure how old these beings really are. We're not sure when this rebellion in the heavenlies took place. We only know that it did take place and that, you know, when that happened, things really got out of control.
And why really, Lynn, why come here?
Well, let me answer with the idea that in ufology, oftentimes, they seem to come here and tell us that I'll just get right down to it, that somehow Jesus Christ really didn't have to die on the cross, or that he really wasn't the Son of God, or that he was genetically manipulated to be Messiah. Why come, you know, thousands of miles to tell us that? Why not give us the cure to cancer?
Or millions.
Exactly. I should have said millions. Thank you for the correction. But in the Nephilim trilogy, it speaks of that. There's a whole chapter where, you know, the protagonist, one of the characters, is really wrestling with this whole theory. It's like if it's nuts and bolts hardware and they're coming from millions of miles, like why come here and tell us this? Why go out of your way to tell us this? Why not, you know, give us a cure to cancer or something
right.
more useful?
Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment with our guest Lynn Marzulli right here on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest tonight, Lynn Marzulli, lots of questions. I'd like to know why the Nephilim ended up being so wicked, so evil. What happened? Why? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. As we build up, Lynn, to the discussion about the Antichrist, we'll probably do that next hour. Why do you believe the Nephilim ended up, became so wicked, so evil? I mean, where did that genetic trait come from?
You know, I thought about that during the break, and I would answer that with another question. What makes someone like Pol Pot do the things that he does?
Or Hitler, like, or Hitler, same
exactly,
thing.
Exactly, same idea. I mean, you know, killing 6 million Jews, deliberately killing 6 million Jews and millions of other people, it makes you wonder. I mean, they're not born that way, and somehow they become these monsters that later on in life they manifest who they really are. It seems like, you know, that this evil is real, that it's more than a force, that it can be personalized. It has great power. We see it manifest itself on this planet from time to time. Certainly Hitler, Pol Pot would be one, Idi Amin would be another. The slaughter that happened in Rwanda would be something. The civil war in this country where a great atrocities happened, maybe the genocide of the Indians could be looked at in the same way. But getting back to the fallen angels, something happened. In other words, they fell from grace. They fell from a state where they could look at the overseer, God, if you want to call him that. They could look at this guy or whatever he is. I believe he's personal. I believe he's someone that I can, you know. But something happened. There was some sort of a rebellion. And because of that rebellion, they changed. And that's why when he says to them, you shall have no peace, I think their peace was taken away. And when their peace was taken away, they fell into the state which further degenerated over the aeons of time.
Is it possible that humans today have this mean, wicked genetic streak in them because of the Nephilim?
I don't think so, but I do think that human beings, all human beings on this planet, seek one thing. They seek peace. You know, everyone is looking for inner peace. I hate to sound that way.
I'm not sure if it's
everyone. Everyone is looking for inner peace. Everyone wants, you know, to be free of stress and to have peace in their lives.
I know. I think there's some people, Lynn, who just always want chaos.
I agree. I mean, serial killers certainly want chaos.
Yep.
The BTK killer that was just found recently.
So I would say most people want peace, but not all of them. There are just some people.
I agree.
I
agree. And then there are people that deliberately have given themselves over to the other side.
Right. Well, in the fallen angels scenario, wasn't Lucifer part of that group?
Of course. I believe that Lucifer, which means light bearer, at one time, apparently, according to ancient manuscripts, was one of the big guys, one of the big Jesus, one of the head angels, if you were. And he was the guy that led the rebellion.
Do you think he walked this planet?
I definitely think he walks the planet. Certainly, again, going back to ancient texts, we see that there's one passage that comes to mind where there seems to be a council being held, and these angels, both fallen and good, present themselves to God, to the overseer, and the overseer, God, says, where have you guys been? And Satan says, I have been to and fro walking over the face of the earth. So, I mean, it's a direct quote. Now, I wasn't there at the meeting, so I can't prove that he said it. But what I find fascinating, and the reason, getting back to Mr. Sitchin and why I don't hold to his worldview, the one thing that the Hebrew scriptures especially have that the Sumerians don't have is a constant thread of prophecy which has been fulfilled in the past and is being fulfilled even today. And that's why I lean very heavily and very strongly on those scriptures, because it seems that someone who's writing this stuff seems to be dwelling outside the space-time continuum,
right,
as we know it.
Absolutely.
They know the end from the beginning and the beginning from the end. It would be like in a helicopter above a parade. If you and I, George, were on the street looking at the parade, we'd see the Mickey Mouse float go by and we'd wave to the people and wait for the next float. But if we were in a helicopter where the overseer is, we'd see the whole parade from beginning to end. So the overseer, it's nothing for him to go, hey, I can go back and this is the last float over here.
Well, but see, what we could not say, though, is whether that Mickey Mouse exhibit tips over and falls into a pile of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yet in the scripture here, in Hebrew, they have, you know, the book of Revelation, they have the vision of what will happen.
They do.
You and I couldn't see that.
Correct. But the people that, let's say, John on Patmos, And this is written around 90 years at, or 90 AD. So it's after the fall of Jerusalem, more than likely after the fall of Jerusalem. And what he talks about is something so futuristic and so bizarre that through the centuries, a lot of Christian scholars have not looked at the book, couldn't understand the book. And I mean, I've read it numerous times, and there's a lot of things in the book of Revelation that are very difficult to understand and sometimes hard to deal with. The thing is, I believe he was taken there, and I believe he was shown that. Because, again, if you have this being, if you have this God who dwells outside the space-time continuum as we know it, it's nothing for him to show what will happen. I mean, you and I are bound, the whole human race is bound by this linear progression of time. You know, I'm talking to you right now, and the seconds are ticking. I can't leap into the future. I can if let's say I'm anointed that way.
True.
Or if the Spirit of God came upon me.
Or you knew the secret.
Well, I believe that in order for me to see ahead, I would have to have the Spirit of the living God come upon me and show me something. Now, I've had little glimpses of my own personal life from time to time, which I believe are, dare I use the word, spirit-led, but I do. I believe that I've had glimpses of things that will happen, and then they have happened.
Your books, the trilogy, all have either a UFO or an extraterrestrial look at it. The Nephilim, for example,
sure.
I mean, it's got a shadowy figure on the cover of what we have described as grays.
Correct.
Looks like the being coming out of the, Close Encounters.
There you go.
Revealing, a great graphic of a city with UFOs.
That's actually the Temple Mount in Jerusalem.
That's what I thought.
Yep.
That's right, and it's all lit up, and you've got UFOs over that. So somewhere in your fiction that is also into the nonfiction, you do believe that so you believe in extraterrestrials. You just don't believe that it's planetary type, right?
I believe that what we call extraterrestrials are actually fallen angels that are part of this, what I believe is the coming deception. I mean, it's already here. We're talking about it tonight, so it's not something that like 100 years ago,
sure.
You know, people, it wasn't part of the culture. Even in the 50s, it just started to become part of the culture. Now it's like, you know, most everyone knows what a gray is. You know, it's been enculturated. And I believe that what we're looking at is a deception. The alien gospel, if I can use that term, is one of the main points that they make is that we, the aliens, genetically manipulated us, the humans, over a period of thousands of years to produce modern man. Now, I just find that really interesting. And, of course, some people believe that. But what it does is it goes against, every account of ancient scripture, which speaks of man being created ex nihilo.
Well, assuming ancient scripture is correct or accurate.
And the only reason why I believe the ancient scripture, this goes back to the prophecy thing, what I can kind of hang my hat on is the fact that whoever wrote this stuff seems to know the end from the beginning and the beginning from end, and it's prophecy that's, you know, we can look back at it and see it's fulfilled in one area, and we can also see it being fulfilled in our lifetime. Israel is a perfect example of the prophetic word being fulfilled.
Now, these fallen angels, do you believe when they came down here, and I'm going to ask you for a time period in a moment, and I'm sure it's a guess, but let's see how close you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe they came here in flying saucers, UFOs?
Good question.
Physical structured craft?
Good question. Some of the ancient manuscripts, some things from the Dead Sea Scrolls, it talks about sun disks. We've got through the ages, they talk about witnesses talk about silver disks. I think these things in ancient Indian
the Vedas
exactly talks about certain flying machines that they used. So the technology could have been there. I mean, why the technology is there? I don't really understand that. But you know, maybe their wings were clipped. I mean, I know that sounds kind of silly. But what if, you know? What if that's how they kind of bop around the universe to a degree? There's no answer to that.
Well, what if you're correct that they come from, let's say, different time, different dimensions, but maybe it's a traveling through a wormhole or something, or some kind of bend in space, but they need these craft to get here to do what they do.
It certainly is very possible. Another idea would be that because they're in a fallen state, they have lost some of their mobility. That's why I was kind of being silly a little early and said their wings were clipped.
You may be right.
Maybe they've lost mobility.
They took that away.
Yeah, where it seems like other interdimensional beings, which are benevolent, just appear. Like if you look in the Christian scriptures, which talks about the Annunciation, where this angel just pops in front of this woman, Mary, and just says, this is what's going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to have this child, he's the most anointed, and you know, he's going to be the Messiah of the world. Okay, that's interesting. The angel just appears from nowhere. When Jesus apparently is resurrected, at one point in time, he just kind of walks through a wall and manifests himself in front of the apostles. And, you know, everybody's blown away. It's like, you know, they think it's a ghost. And he says to them, touch me, feel me, I'm you know, flesh and blood, I'm not a ghost, give me something to eat. And then, of course, he vanishes the same way. So there are laws here that we really don't understand,
that are beyond
the science that we know, at least now.
If this is true, though, that they came here in craft, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, mm-hmm. back about when?
I'd say it has to be more than 10,000 years.
Ago.
Yeah, definitely okay. more than 10,000 years.
And
between 10 and 20,000 years ago.
Craft are still being seen. So that means the deception is still continuing.
Well, the deception has been ramped up. I mean, now it's like people are seeing them much more frequently than they were, let's say, 100 years ago. Yes, there were sightings, but nothing like today. I mean, and at the end of World War II with the Foo Fighters, 1945, we thought they were the Russians. The Russians thought they were us.
Right.
You know, no one knew what was going on. And, you know, of course, the Roswell incidents, and now we have, you know, fires. I get that once every week, and all these different sightings from all over the United States and all over the world. So it seems to be a burgeoning phenomena. It seems to be manifesting much more frequently. Certainly, I believe that the abduction phenomena has been ramped up. I think they have an agenda, and I think the agenda is deception. In the third book, The Revealing, you mentioned the cover, and that shows.
Yeah, why the Temple Mount? Why do you have that there?
Well, there's an ancient document which has never been translated to the masses, but a friend of mine, who I will remain anonymous, was able to look at this document, and for our purposes, we'll just call it the Apocalyptic Scroll.
I'd love to hear about this.
And he said that he read this thing, and what it said, and I'm paraphrasing here, was that at the end of some great battle, for Jerusalem, that above the city were suddenly appearing hundreds of sun disks, and his jaw dropped because he knew, you know, from his interpretation of that, he could only conclude that he was looking at, you know, some sort of a UFO manifestation.
Right.
So I took that story that he told me and ran with it, and that became the cover for the third book.
Now, was this a story that occurred or story in the future?
This is a story that was spoken of a couple of thousand, maybe 2,500, 3,000 years ago. I'm not sure of the dating of that particular scroll, which has not been deciphered. I have no idea.
But of an event that had occurred?
No, not occurred yet.
Not occurred?
Not occurred yet.
So,
hence the Temple Mount with the Dome of the Rock on it. If you look at the cover, it's the Dome of the Rock, and the Dome of the Rock is all lit up.
And it's a modern city in the background.
Modern city, correct. And what's interesting about this, and we can jump into this, you know, now if you want to, but one of the scriptures in Ezekiel 38 in the Hebrew Bible talks about a confederacy of nations, and this is why I hang my hat on the prophecy, a confederacy of nations coming up against a land of unwalled villages. And when you think about that in the ancient world, and I get into all this in the books, it talks about this and extrapolate it, and, you know, characters banter back and forth interpretations, but in the ancient world, there was no such thing as a land of unwalled villages. The first thing you did is you built a wall and a moat and defended it, and, you know, and that's what you did. So it's for someone to say something like that is really preposterous when that book was written thousands of years ago, to talk about in the latter days. I mean, it's even that specific. In the latter days, a confederacy of nations will go up Israel, a land of unwalled villages, to take plunder and spoil. And that to me is absolutely, utterly profound to read something like that. And what's interesting is the nations that are mentioned, and it blew my mind when I read it, Iraq, you would instantly, from looking at a map today, let's say before the invasion, you would figure that, well, Iraq has to be part of this confederacy.
Right.
Not mentioned. But guess who is? Iran.
Yeah.
Iran is mentioned. Iran, Libya, and then, of course, whatever's from the north. Some people believe it's Russia. It could be Chechnya. We're not sure. but it's definitely a nation from the north. More than likely, it's Russia. I believe it's Russia.
And what is about what could occur?
Well, there's a confederacy of these nations which conspire. And remember, when this was written, there is no Islamic religion as we know it. There is no Islamofascism, which is, you know, all over the planet. I think even tonight there's like a scare now in New York.
A subway scare.
Exactly. So, you know, all these, this is, it's part of our culture. It's something that we're just dealing with now. The Israelis have been dealing with this thing since independence. And it's this confederacy of what are now Islamic nations which go up against Israel. And Israel responds, and it says very specifically how Israel responds. It says that the confederacy of nations, while they are standing on their feet, their tongues will rot in their mouth, and their eyes will disintegrate in their sockets, which to me sounds very much like a neutron bomb, which, of course, we know that the Israelis have.
Mm-hmm.
So this confederacy of nations are pouring down. They're attacking Israel. Israel has nowhere to go except to use its nuclear arsenal. They're being attacked on every side. And this fulfills that scripture. It's in Ezekiel 38 and 39.
Do you think that's happening now?
I think the stage is being set for it. Absolutely. I think the stage is being set for it. Because the nations that are there, for instance, when you look at what just happened with the Gaza Strip, where the Israelis pulled out of it, if you go to a website called Debkafile, you'll get.
Oh yeah, I go there a lot.
I do too, and you'll get kind of an inside look at what's really happening. Well, since the Israelis moved out of those settlements, what's been happening is certain forces have come in and are launching rocket-propelled grenades and rockets into Israel. There's been attacks constantly. So nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. And, of course, it's all about the Temple Mount. It's all about the city of Jerusalem. And it's all about the fact that, in the Arab mind, Israel, the state of Israel, was once Arab land. And the way the Muslims look at that, once a land becomes Muslim and it ceases to become Muslim, let's say another country takes it over, mm-hmm. it becomes something else, it's the Muslims' duty to retake that land
mm-hmm.
for Allah.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got this incredible tension which is ongoing. We all know it's going. And this, again, fulfills what I believe is another scripture, another prophecy.
This apocalyptic document that your friend saw, mm-hmm. why hasn't it been revealed to all of us?
Well, why wasn't the Dead Sea Scrolls translated and revealed? You know, Herschel Shanks had to basically photograph them and hijack them.
And there's probably still some that haven't been
exactly,
given to us.
Exactly. And one has to ask, you know, what are you guys holding up here? And this kind of stuff leads to the rise of secret knowledge, or something was missing, or something that's like what the Da Vinci Code is written on, that there's like some sort of secret that we've somehow missed over the thousands of years. And that tantalizes people. I mean, I've read the books, you know, and he's a good author. I mean, I like his stuff. It's a very intriguing story. Of course, I don't believe, you know, that something is missing. I only believe that what the truth of what happened 2,000 years ago has been obfuscated by a lot of dogma and a lot of religiosity.
All right, stay with us, Lynn. Fascinating. We'll be back. There's much more to talk about on Coast to Coast AM.